Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, we're going to try to bring everybody up to speed and give as good of an idea as to where Florida State stands with some potential coaching changes, both at the assistant level and obviously if you've been following the program at all over the last 48 hours, the rumors about the Texas A&M job have only grown stronger as time has passed. So we'll try to bring everybody up to date as much as possible. Always risky doing something like this on a podcast, as you can do 45 minutes worth of material and have it dated pretty significantly 30 minutes after you record. But we'll give everybody an idea as to what we've heard, what we know, and kind of where we stand moving into Thanksgiving with both Jimbo Fisher and also the current assistants that are on staff.
Yeah, and Ingram, tonight we're recording this Tuesday night at, 9:30? The news tonight is that the Houston Chronicle, which is a very large, respected newspaper, as well as Yahoo and some other outlets, are reporting that A&M is expected to fire Kevin Sumlin after this weekend's LSU game, and that is not at all surprising. I think most of us expected that to happen, maybe with the exception of if there would be some sort of game of chicken being played between A&M and Sumlin with the thought that Sumlin might want to go take the UCLA job, and if he was going to do that, maybe he'd ask out before A&M asked him to leave, and they'd be able to save their oil money on the buyout, which is $10 million. But it looks like they're not going to worry about doing that. It looks like they're just going to go ahead and fire Kevin Sumlin, who actually, I think, did a pretty good job in A&M, just not good enough for their expectations in the SC. And one of the reasons we bring this up, we've mentioned this on the show before, is that beginning somewhere around the NC State game, we became aware from some A&M sources that we had that Jimbo Fisher was believed to be the top A&M target. I think we've always kind of fluctuated based on how much we thought that was actually legit as far as Jimbo's interest in that. But A&M's interest in Fisher has not waned from what we understand. And I was speaking to Ingram this morning. I said, hey, man, something weird to me happened on Monday. He said, what's up with that? And I said, I had two different media outlets in Texas call me out of the blue on Monday. And they said, hey, what are you doing on December 3rd? I don't know. It's a day after Florida State's last game. And I said, we think you know what we're calling about. And I said, I don't actually, because I'm kind of looking into a different investigative matter in Texas as well for SB Nation. And they told me, hey, we think it's done that Jimbo Fisher's going to Texas A&M. That's what our sources are telling us. And we want you lined up to come on and talk if they're right. And I said, look, I mean, I'd love to help you out, but I got 100 million page view website to run. And if this goes down like that, that's going to be a really busy day for me. So I don't know, you know, but that got me realizing, man, we may need to do this show tonight. Because if you got different media outlets really expecting this to happen, and these are all A&M outlets, right? I have not had a single FSU person tell me that they strongly believe he's gone. This is all from the A&M side. Well, we probably need to do a show then. Because the timing certainly seems to fit why they would ask me to come on that day. Because look, A&M season's over Saturday. Florida State has the extra hurricane makeup game to play, which is on December 2nd. And they got into details, too. They said, hey, the word down here in College Station would be $50 million over 6 years. That's a little over $8 a year, guaranteed, which that's about a 45% annual raise for Fisher. Now, he is guaranteed about $50 million if you factor in the two options on his current deal, but that's a 7 converted to a 9-year deal as opposed to a 6-year deal. Very interesting, man. I tell you, that kind of threw me for a loop yesterday that they firmly believe this is happening.
They do. That's something that I've gotten from less official sources over there as well. But that's not wildly uncommon either, sometimes in coaching changes. Now, maybe to the extent that we're talking about, this would be at a higher level. But about 10 years ago, a decent amount of people with somewhat of a knowledge of the program were pretty sure that Kirby Smart was going to be Florida State's next defense coordinator. Now, that didn't end up happening. And whether or not there was at one time a agreement for him to come on or whether or not that was just like a hyperbole hype train that got going doesn't really matter at this point. But I just want to give an example of times where significant amount of a fan base can be convinced of something that may not necessarily be bad information, just doesn't necessarily come to fruition.
Look, I think it's also entirely possible that they're just covering their bases, right? If I'm a producer for a television station in Houston, and I get word that Jimbo Fisher is going to be the next A&M head coach.
I have done this exact job, and that's exactly what you do.
Yes. You used to do this in radio.
Yes.
So look, they may have bad information. In fact, I think they might, at least partially. They may just line up the foremost Florida State expert in the world to get on their television show. That's very possible. But this is multiple different people over there saying that they think this is done, they think this is happening, and citing a very similar number as far as a contract. That's curious. And I called one of my best sources today. I said, hey, you got any wind that Fisher's looking to leave? And he said, no. He's getting his GD facility.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy complained to me a little bit that, hey, the way this facility thing went down did not need to be adversarial, right? Like, he's already your $50 million man. Not everything needs to happen in kind of an adversarial, you know, confrontational way. You know, and some things take time, and you need to have feasibility studies and things like that, but that it's getting done. And that Florida State's going to pony up all the money that he needs to make coaching changes here. My guy was really confident in that, and that's the guy I go to when I really need stuff. But he said no, and it would catch him off guard if Fisher is going to leave, and I think he's one of the guys that might catch drift of it before it actually happens. So we got a lot of questions about this, obviously, especially in the last couple hours. And basically the two main ones, I think, are, you know, how likely is Fisher to leave, and why would Fisher want to leave? The how likely, I think, is tougher, because I don't know. And it's tough to say, because as far as I can tell, he's not talking to anybody, man. At least not at Florida State. Now, maybe he's talking to his agent. You know, I don't know. Now, he certainly didn't deny it, and that's been his thing all along. I tend to believe, and maybe you disagree with me here, maybe we have some good organic disagreement on the show, but if somebody gives you $50 million guaranteed, assuming you win 9 games twice in 8 years, which I think you'll do at Florida State, I think that should buy some both loyalty of actions, but also loyalty of words. And this, I think, gets back to the everything doesn't have to be adversarial approach. You know, if you're Fisher, and I had a pretty high up booster suggest to me something that he thinks Fisher should say instead of saying, I'll never talk about jobs. He goes, if you want to lawyer it like that, why not just say this? I will never speak about a job that's not open out of respect for other coaches, and I don't have any interest in any open jobs. That sort of leaves the door open if Nick Saban was to leave Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of the nuclear option there. Hey, what if Bama comes open? What if, you know, the Bucks come calling or something crazy like that? But he has not issued a denial, certainly. And I think, you know, some FSU people certainly aren't real happy about that. But at the same time, inwardly, he's not given the impression that he's going anywhere, at least according to my sources.
Well, you know, that's interesting. It would be frequently that's going to be the last party to know. I'm not necessarily saying that, hey, this is undoubtedly happening. I'm just saying that the school that's chasing after somebody and those spheres of influence and the way that information gets out, a lot more frequently you hear about it from that end than necessarily the departing school that's involved. If you really want to look at things that have gone across the season and you were wanted to convince yourself that maybe this decision was made a decent period of time, there's probably one or two things that you could look at and really examine and wonder about.
Like a lack of recruiting?
Like a lack of recruiting and the way that some certain high-profile prospects, how their recruitment ended, yes.
Maybe without visits on campus.
And some of the legwork that's necessary to sign a kid. I'm talking about Justin Fields. I no reason to dance around it. The way that recruitment ended is flat-out bizarre. It is. Doesn't make sense.
Look, if he leaves, we're going to sit back here and connect the dots ex post facto and say, damn, man, his staff was really mailing in recruiting over the last 5 months. I'm having to word updates on Tomahawk. Like, hey, here's a kid Florida State should look at once it gets its new assistant coaches.
Because
they're not doing a damn thing in recruiting right now. Not anything of consequence, really. I mean, they're doing a little bit of quarterback stuff with James Foster, but there's not a whole lot going on.
Now, at the same time, you could argue that there's so much going on in getting kids ready to play and how deficient parts of the staffs are that all hands on deck still only gives you so many hands to do so many tasks. And maybe we're over, you know, placing too much interest on certain things. But look, this is something that you mentioned to me a long time ago. It was the NC State week was the first time that this came about. Now, you know, rumors persist and rumors can linger in college football. Certainly wouldn't be the first time that happened. But this is not necessarily a new thing, and it doesn't appear to have subsided in any way. So in a way, the idea that maybe there is some kind of definitive window of time is probably the best thing possible for everybody. And if we're sitting here 12 days from now or 14 days from now talking about a move, then that's, you know, that's not necessarily the worst thing that happened. And at the very least, there seems to be somewhat of a defined timetable or window of play that this could occur.
All right. So here's a question for you. And this is one that's filled our inbox. Florida State's the better job than Texas A&M, right? Now, A&M could pay a little more money. Certainly, you made a joke on the phone call before we started that you said that it was that their assets were very liquid.
Yeah, very liquid.
Yeah, due to the oil money situation, you know. But Florida State is still a better job in terms of, like, where is it easier to win? So people say, why would it happen now as opposed to taking LSU? And I think LSU is a better job than A&M. Two things. Number one, the situation in Tallahassee's changed a lot. Fisher's message has gone stale. He's going to have to attempt to do something that almost all coaches fail to do, and that's a hard reboot on a program. Not a soft reboot, but a hard one. And most coaches can't get it back. But a lot of coaches could get it back somewhere else. Look at Mark Richt at Miami. He was not getting things turned around at Georgia. It simply wasn't happening. Goes to Miami, resets, new mindset, fresh approach, a group of players eager to hear a message that has grown stale in another location, and he does well. In fact, it might be that Fisher actually has a better chance of success in the future at A&M than he does Tallahassee, just due to the staleness of the message for both players and personnel within the program and employees and coaches and all that. He also has different levels of leverage now. Not that he needs the leverage so much in Tallahassee, because I don't think he does anymore. Like, I don't think there's much he has to leverage out of Florida State. Florida State committed to winning at the highest levels. But he does have a different leverage, and I think his star has faded a little bit. You know, it's 2013 was now 4 years ago, and he's, what, 10-10 in his last 20 ACC games and just not doing so well anymore. Recruiting is not going well. Those are all potential reasons why he could elect to take what is objectively from the outside a worse job, even when you account for the pay. But time-wise, this is the one reason why I really doubt this, at least doubted as of tonight. I'm not saying it won't happen, but at SB Nation, we reported that if Auburn loses to Alabama, that there's a real chance Gus Malzahn will resign and take the Arkansas job. He's an Arkansas guy, Arkansas ties. He was on Houston Nutt's staff there at Arkansas. He was an Arkansas high school coach, and he might just be tired of Auburn's, you know, special brand of crazy. If that happens, you know who Auburn's top target's going to be?
John James Fisher.
Yeah. And this is where, look, he's coached at Auburn before. He understands Auburn's commitment to winning. Auburn will also be picking a new athletic director. And if that happens, I honestly believe that he would probably have some decent input on that, as we've been told. So this is why I don't think that he's actually given A&M a hard yes without knowing what's going to happen at Auburn. And I do believe if you're an A&M fan, you're rooting like hell for Auburn this weekend, because as we reported on SB Nation, if Auburn wins, Malzahn's going to get a contract extension. How about that for a pivotal game? I mean, that's...
It's a hell of a 2 weeks they would have strung together. Yeah, if that's how that ends up playing out.
Can I, by the way, present one more thing here, Ingram? And that's this. If he leaves, I think it's because he's made an honest assessment that it's time to go and try to do it somewhere else. And, you know, my mom, I think, is a good representative of kind of a casual fan. And I was talking on the phone yesterday, and she said, "Hey, what? Why would he leave?" I said, "Mom, I don't know that this is him necessarily, but, you know, you worked in corporate America for a long time. Some guys are just better as, like, mercenary CEO change agents." She goes, "Oh, yeah, change agents, for sure." She goes, you think that's him?" I said, "I think it's a lot of coaches, especially these ones that burn hot and fast, and they burn out. And then they got to go start over somewhere else. We've seen that with a bunch of coaches. It's so much easier to go to the next place.
It's almost harder to name the people that aren't change agents now."
Yes, exactly right. And we've seen Jimbo as change agent Jimbo, and he is awesome at it. And we've seen him as maintainer Jimbo, and he has so far failed at it. We know he can be an awesome change agent. We do not know that he can be a great maintainer. Can he do it? Because I tell you what, if he leaves, that might be the best thing for both him and Florida State. I'm not saying it will be, but it could be, because that could mean that he's making an honest assessment about his ability to continue to have Florida State at a high level, as opposed to his ability to maybe get A&M, you know, one win better per season in the SEC or something.
just something to remember, something to keep in mind for the general fan base, is that fans in general put way too much importance in like the school and loyalty, and these people are hired to do a job. They're no different really than a CEO. And if you get a CEO in who after six consecutive years has led you to, you know, the stock's gone up between 6% and 9% a year and has had great growth, and maybe, I don't know what the hell the corporate similarities to winning a national championship would be, but like somebody who took over GE, a Jack Welch or something like that, who took a big brand, led it back to prominence, made it one of the more preeminent corporations, one of the largest corporations, the largest corporation for a period of time, then that's what you hire these guys for. And that's what Jimbo's done. And he's reestablished the brand. He's confirmed that this is not just a Bowden-specific program, that it's one of the best places in the country to coach college ball. There's a lot of things to be thankful for Jimbo and appreciate the job that he's done, whether or not that means it's coming to an end in the next 2 weeks or 2.5 years from now.
This is also a question that I think, look, because his divorce was very public, people know that it happened. This is a question we got a lot. A lot of people say, well, what is his custody arrangement? And I got to tell you, I don't know, because I'm not his attorney and I don't have access to that. And I don't know that I should. However, I did call my friend who is a family law attorney. And I asked her and I said, Danielle, what's the deal like with the standard Florida custody arrangement? And she told me, and she said, is this about like a you know, because she knows I work in football. And she goes, this is about like a guy with a lot of money. And I said, yeah. And she goes, look, you know, the Florida statute where if you move 50 miles away, you know, you lose your custody default rights. That's almost certainly been negotiated in the divorce settlement to something different than that. So I don't think like the standard Florida, you know, just the default rules here are applicable.
Not operating off a boilerplate settlement, I'm sure.
Probably not. Now, you do know where his ex-wife is from, correct?
Yes, I do.
Birmingham, Alabama. And that is a lot closer to Auburn, Alabama, than it is to College Station, which is basically, you know, suburb of Houston. Just some, you know, some stuff to keep in mind there.
All right, bud. Always want to thank Madison Social. Thank For the Table Restaurant Group, what they've done to make this podcast possible. Hopefully everybody was able to hit up Reuben Day that we reminded you of on the 17th. From all accounts, didn't look like that disappointed at all. Really appreciate the people that made their way to homecoming, and it was awesome to see the ranges in age and people that were like bringing their 5-year-old daughter to games, and you know, included a stop at Madison Social or any of the properties down there. So awesome to see people continue to engage our sponsors and just have a better idea as the community. It's awesome to see stuff like that, particularly in a year when maybe you haven't had as much success as you'd like on the field. It's great to be reminded as to just the fan base and kind of the experiences that occur within it, and kind of how much this podcast, and maybe to a larger extent, how much Madison Social and the entities down there in the shadow of Doak Campbell Stadium have kind of interwoven their way into the fan base.
I mean, Florida State alumni-owned businesses, and it's really become a fabric of the Tallahassee and Florida State community. And Edgar, one of the things we really like from there is the BLT dip. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but on their Instagram page, and as I know you're following them on Instagram, as am I, that's Instagram.com/Madison Social, or just obviously if you have the app, which you should, Madison Social, go follow them. That's pretty awesome. They put their BLT recipe their BLT dip recipe up on Monday. I'm not going to read away on the podcast, obviously, but if you go there, you can see that and they actually show how they make it. That's pretty awesome. The best happy hour in Tallahassee, the best brunch in Tallahassee, and it's a great place to watch the game on Saturday as well. So go check that out, as well as Centrale Township and Community Bakery Sodo, which is now in Midtown. So very much thankful for our Thanksgiving show here for them. Another thing people have been asking a lot about is, hey, can we confirm any of the coaching change rumors out there? And we actually tonight, the problem is that I don't have two matching confirmations on these things. So that means I don't necessarily want to put names on them. Some people will surely read between the lines on these. I can tell you that there are multiple coaches we expect to not be back with the staff. I think think we're pretty solid on six, right? And then maybe one more who may or may not be back. And then we know that you know, some other coaches have been reached out to as well. What we don't know is if they've been reached out to for this staff or if perhaps, you know, an A&M staff or an Auburn staff, right? Like, it's my opinion that if Fisher were to take another one of these jobs, that he would take very few, if any, of his current coaches. Like, if he takes A&M, who do you think he would take with him off this staff?
Tim Brewster.
Agreed. And that's it.
That's it. Maybe Damian would get a job.
But that speaks volumes to the poor job of stewardship that Fisher has done with this program over the last, you know, 3 years or so. As far as important, you got to call the coaching staff and make sure that thing stays fresh and up to date. So we were told this week, and these are just people that I trust. One coach has already hired a real estate agent to sell his home at the end of the season. So I think he, you know, if you're doing that, you're probably not expecting to be back. One coach is expected to retire and take a job within the athletic department. One coach is looking to get a job in the NFL. And we know actually that another coach has been contacted about being on Fisher's staff for this coach's spot. 247 already reported that Randy Sanders is not expected to return. And we reported that he had been taking off quarterback recruiting duties several weeks ago. And we already know to expect a change at defensive coordinator. So, I mean, that's five. I think there's going to be at least six coaching changes, whether Fisher's here or not. Obviously, if Fisher's gone, then add one to that. But if he takes another job, I think that his staff at a new school will be almost entirely new. So I don't know what to expect, man. I mean, and I don't think we're going to do another show, you know, before Thanksgiving, unless something crazy breaks. So that's kind of where we are with this right now. You know, he could go. He could stay. The one thing I will say, I don't think Florida State will match
Texas A&M. Not a chance.
They're gonna be like, no. No, man. Like, you kind of, you know, did this to us for 3 or 4 years in a row, and we played your game. But at this point, if we pump more money into you, it's gonna be for like, you know, assistance or, you know, even crazier facility or something like that. The last couple of years shouldn't give us any confidence that you're an $8 million man to us. Maybe you are at A&M, but they have to go above and beyond, because A&M has not won a damn thing since, what, the Korean War?
Are you talking like Junction Boys the last time A&M was a good team?
Yeah. So, okay, they have 3 division titles ever, 19 conference titles. Not really sure when the last time that was. They have 1 national title. Or no, 3. I'm sorry. 1919. Is anybody living actually still born in 19? Yeah, they got to be right.
Well, I mean, they'd be 97 years old. So,
but they wouldn't have remembered it probably, because I mean, if you're 97, you probably have some serious memory loss issues already, and you would have been 0 years old then. So, like, if you were like 10 back then, you could be 100. Yeah. Okay, so it's very doubtful that many people remember A&M's first national title, 1927 national title. That was a doozy, and then a 1939 national title. And Ingram, do you know what all 3 national titles have in common?
Well, yeah, I have a couple things in mind, but what exactly are you alluding to, bud?
No black players.
Yeah, that's what I was going to think, too. I didn't just want to say, yeah. That's a different game.
You got to recruit against Tom Herman, who is a beast in Houston, and you have to recruit against the SEC West, which is not easy. At Florida State, if you do your job, you will have more talent than every single team you play on your regular schedule. So that's Clemson, Florida, and Miami, or at least equal, most likely more. If you do your job at A&M, you are probably at a talent disadvantage in at least 2 games and maybe 3 every year. That's tougher. Just saying. And they've had some good coaches there. You know? I mean, Gene Stallings was a coach there. R.C. Slocum did a pretty good job there. You know, Dennis Franchione, not so much. You know, and someone actually hasn't done a terrible job. That's just – that's a job with immense financial resources and great facilities. But for some reason, they just never seem to put it all together. So you can go there and be a hero. For sure. But a lot of coaches have gone there thinking that and not been able to pull it out. I think Jimbo could do it, though, for real. I think he has enormous coaching ability, particularly as a change agent. He could go there. People would be anxious to hear that message. He'd represent a very different approach than Kevin Sumlin. And I think he could win a national title at Texas A&M. I do. Possible.
Yeah, it's possible. Definitely. He's a great recruiter. He would, ironically enough, potentially have his selection of all the 2019 kids to work around as far as quarterback. And I immediately dismiss reports of people are like, oh, well, he might take the Texas A&M job because of a particular kid that's committed.
No.
You don't move jobs because of that crap. So don't, that's a ridiculous idea. But he would have a piece to build around and sell, and he would hit the ground running, definitely.
What he thinks of his current roster, though, is not an insignificant part of deciding to stay or go.
Very true.
If he decides to go, that's the other part of this. Like, he may think, okay, my time is worn out here. But he might also think, I don't like this roster I have coming back. I've got a quarterback Snapchatting himself during a game.
Not just a game, senior day. You know, you've been in that program. You know those kids. That's a big-ass deal.
Could you imagine Jameis or Derwin doing that?
It's a big deal. And we threw this out there, I don't remember how many weeks ago, and we've alluded to it throughout the season and times where you can hear it if you go back and you listen to the quarterback preview podcast. DeAndre Francois's got some questions to answer as far as how much of a part of this program he's going to be moving forward and how much he wants to be. And I'm not sure that he's a real great influence on the locker room. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure that all parties wouldn't be better off kind of wiping their hands clean and getting a new start.
So I don't know if we're the only outlet, but we're one of the only ones who just never drank the Francois Kool-Aid. Now, a large part of that is because he was a 47% passer against ranked teams and has never been an accurate thrower of the football at high school or in college. Not a small thing. Because we had people in this program who would laugh at these national articles, and they would send us screenshots and say, hey, you see this? Like, this guy who comes in and, you know, swoops in from ESPN 10,000-foot view and talks about what an amazing leader Francois is. And they'd highlight it, and they would just send us, like, the, you know, laughy face emojis. That's not him, man. He certainly doesn't have unanimous support of the locker room. And look, you always wonder, okay, you know, is this guy, maybe he just doesn't like the kid. But, you know, the more you hear it, the more it's like, okay, yeah, this is definitely a fragmented locker room in terms of their opinion on Francois. And additionally, we talk about some of the troublemakers on this team, and he hangs out with them a lot. And if your quarterback is not willing to get on the guys who are causing trouble on the team, then that does impact his ability to be a leader, right? Because if your best buddy is a dude who's always screwing up and you're supposed to be the leader, and you don't get on him, other people are going to notice that. They're going to see it. And that's a problem. And I do think that Fisher didn't call him out specifically in the media, but I will say, man, he said two words, and Jimbo was very quick to try to defend his players. And whether that's telling the truth or just saying whatever he feels like is appropriate at the time. And he had every opportunity just to lie if he wanted to and say, oh, you know, he's celebrating Thanksgiving early with his family, or he had to go do a rehab or a doctor's visit on Friday and decided to stay down in Orlando on Saturday or whatever. And you know all he said to answer the question?
Player discretion.
And then there's like a 5-second pause. And everybody in that room on the press conference Monday is waiting for him to say something else, and he doesn't. And I think that silence, as David Visser, our managing editor of Tomahawk, wrote today, that says a lot, man. A lot. That's concerning. Look, I think that's why people like the NOLCast, dude, because we don't buy into just the narrative stuff if that's not what we're hearing. Like, it's so easy and tempting to say, oh, you know, returning starter, took a lot of big shots last year, great leader. You know, people saw those shots he took and are really inspired by it. Not when a lot of them were his own fault. Not when you see how the guy acts in off-season workouts at times. I got to tell you, man, turns people off for sure, including maybe some junior leaders on this team. Anyway, that's just something to keep in mind there. But look, skipping the game is one thing. Snapchatting, basically purposefully letting people know that you're not even watching the game, that's another. And my buddy, who's a pretty big booster, texted me and said, you know, Fisher about the fans. Keep showing up. Keep clapping.
Mm-hmm.
Fisher on his quarterback. Player discretion.
I still think, man, I mean, you played high school ball, bud. You know, and then like senior day and the situation that surrounded it, that's one of the least certainly lacked some atmosphere, I'll put it that way. But still, you've been in a college program. You've played with those guys since the day you got there. You've gone through everything that you've gone through. You don't just blow that off. And that in and of itself, not to mention the fact that he was Snapchatting or who he was hanging out with or anything else, I just think there's enough that you don't really have to go into that all that much. It's significant, and we'll see how it plays out from there.
Or retweeting a bunch of stuff about how the team could be undefeated if you
well, that's were, ridiculous.
You know, that, I mean, like,
that's something we talked about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's just ridiculous.
Anyway, look, this is, you know, we try to go facts over narrative, and that's an example of where that proved us right. And I think you're seeing the fan base start to shift on that kid really quickly. We got an email question here. Actually, we had a lot, but we're running kind of long on what's supposed to be a short episode here.
We did have an email question, and it will has to double as our reminder as to our sponsor, Louisiana Hot Sauce, and all that they do to make this podcast possible. Question and idea for Christmas. I decided to get everyone in my office Louisiana Hot Sauce for Christmas. So if they see a psych and spells, that's me. Listeners should get their office mates some Louisiana hot sauce for Christmas. I never thought I'd be so pumped, but happy to support something that chooses to support the Nolcast. Well, that is an awesome idea, and that's a really cheap way to take care of a lot of people, and it's a unique gift. So hats off to the emailer. Very much appreciate that, and great way to support the Nolcast and maybe placate your office or coworkers as well. His question happened to be, if Chip Kelly is hired at Florida, along with other programs on the uptrend, how does that exactly impact Florida State? And does that necessarily mean that it would expedite Jimbo's realization as to the state of the program or where it might be headed?
Well, hey, that's a great Christmas gift. Louisiana hot sauce is certainly a way to what a great stocking stuffer, man. Very cool. Right now, Florida's the best job available on the market to most coaches. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly's a different dude. There are certain ways you can live your life in L.A. that are easier to do in L.A. than Gainesville. And even though L.A. is a higher profile town, you're a lot more anonymous in Los Angeles than you are in Gainesville, right? You know, especially the coach of UCLA. I mean, they got two NFL teams. They have the Lakers. They have the Dodgers, who just went to the World Series. You got the Anaheim Angels. You have a zillion movie stars on the non-sports side of things. And you have USC, which is the preeminent college football team in that town. UCLA is an afterthought. So you can kind of do your own thing there. Gainesville, you are the show.
A lot of people want to coach in the bubble that is the SEC and everything that goes with it. A lot of people don't want to be recognized every time they go out for dinner, every time they go out and get a drink. A lot of people choose or would much rather live in a world-class city and perhaps have an air of anonymity about them when they go about town.
Look, but I think at the same time, I think Chip Kelly could do an excellent job at Florida. Now, I think he understands the need to get players. Certainly the first time at Oregon, the whole
paper trail.
Yeah, you don't want to pay street agents with a check. That's not the best thing. But look, he learned that lesson at Oregon, not at Florida. So, and he certainly knew the type of person that you need to contact and deal with if you were going to be, you know, elite in college football. Like, it's a dirty game. You know, you go read Meet the Bagman by Stephen Godfrey if you're uncertain to what I'm talking about. I think he can get very good players at Florida. I think Chip Kelly's offenses at the college level are absolutely always going to score points, almost regardless. I think offensive coaching, like scheme-wise, is more important than defensive coaching. Defense, to me, is once you get a certain base level of defensive coaching, is more about talent and effort level and hustle as opposed to offense. I think, you know, that's why we see recruiting rankings match up with defense a lot more than they do offense for a couple of reasons, but one of the main ones is you can kind of scheme guys open if you're really good as a college coach. Defensively, there's only so many different schemes you can run. The variations are fewer, but it's going to depend on the guys he would hire at Florida, but I think he would get decent players there, and I think he would score points. But, you know, based on his track record at Colorado State, I thought McElwain would do a pretty good job too, although at the time, you can go back and listen to this, I did think that Florida should have hired a spread coach because I think running the spread in Florida makes a hell of a lot of sense given all the receiver talent you can get in the state. So I was kind of laughing that Florida wouldn't take advantage of it, especially when they were coming off the Muschamp era, which didn't work running the pro-style scheme, and coming off two coaches ago, the Urban Meyer era, which was running a very spread scheme and won two national titles. You know, but now, if Florida does it, I think that's not a bad move. I mean, I think Scott Frost could be successful there. It's a very good program, just like Florida State is. And by the way, I do think Florida State's a better job currently. And I think one of the main reasons there, one you mentioned earlier in the show, and that's Jimbo Fisher and the job he did proved that it was not just a Bobby Bowden thing. Now Jimbo's showing, hey, if you're a good coach, you can win big at Florida State. And they've made a boatload of facilities upgrades and commitments for more, including the football facility, which I 100% believe is coming. That's a really good job. I think Florida State, if Florida State comes open, will bump Florida. But no, I don't think that just hiring Chip Kelly will mean that Florida State's in for some down years. Florida State would have to be complicit in that and screw up whatever they end up doing.
Yeah. The second part of that question is like the external. I don't think there's any external motivation that's going to push Jimbo Fisher. If he hasn't seen what's happened in the past 18 months as far as the emergence of somebody in his own conference, in his own division, what's happened in South Florida, what's happened in Athens, Georgia.
The Athens thing is really big for, in my opinion, for FSU passing Florida as a job.
Mm-hmm. Good call. I agree.
Because Georgia's not screwing around, man, like as far as getting players.
They are fully committed. Fully committed.
They're trying to be Alabama East in a way that like Florida said they were but never really committed to doing under Muschamp.
At this point, I don't think there's any external. It's going to have to come from within. It wouldn't be necessarily who Florida decided to choose as their head coach.
Oh, by the way, remember 3 or 4 shows ago when we were joking around about how FSU is a public university, so you could Freedom of Information Act them or open records request them about those analytics documents? Our emailer did that.
Yeah. I don't think he was the only one either.
Really? Okay. There you go. That is true. You can always certainly do that. Wonder if we could open records request who is subscribed to the Nolcast via like while they're on a work computer. That'd be really interesting.